This programme is brought to you by Big Motoring World, one of the UK's largest used car supermarkets. Find out more at bigmotoringworld.co.uk. Welcome to Legends of News, the podcast that talks to the journalists who've had a front row seat at the making of history over the last half a century, and indeed more in some cases. We'll be hearing from the people who are on the spot when the most extraordinary and significant events unfolded right in front of them, who interviewed the good, the great, and indeed the not so great, and who spent thousands of hours keeping us informed on our televisions and radios. Many of them are colleagues and rivals, sometimes both, during my own 40 years in broadcast news. Well, my guest today has 30-odd years of time before the broadcast news mast. She has been both of those, both a colleague and a rival. The most significant portion of those years was spent with the BBC, leaving just a few years ago during the rather painful merger of the corporation's continuous news channels, BBC World News and BBC News, formerly 24. She's now made a surprising transition into a new career. Or is it that surprising? All will be revealed shortly. I'm delighted to say Joanna Gosling is here. Joanna, you're very welcome to Legends of News. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Well, thank you so much for doing it. I know how busy you are. With this recording, you've got to rush off to Bristol very shortly. Are you busier than ever?
I am. I've got the classic portfolio career going now. And it turns out that when you do lots of different things, it's great because it taps into different areas of interest. It's also a bit of a high wire act, making everything work, but I'm really enjoying it.
And has it cleared the space? Are you doing things that you always wanted to do more of? I presume you were doing them while you were, driving the news bus on BBC News, but you're able then to do more of it.
It's been a really interesting transition in that when I was doing news, I'd often read about people that had a big career change, and I'd think, well, how do you know what you want to do different from what you've always been doing? And secondly, all I ever wanted to do was news, actually. So it wasn't like I was sitting there casting around to find something else. But what did happen was, life happens, you see things, you experience things. And my interests were really sort of taking me down a different route, not completely different from news, because it's still very much the same skills. It's about, my new world is mediation. I was questioning how you have difficult conversations, and that's what is the stock in trade of being a journalist, isn't it? But as society was changing, time of cancel culture, it was increasingly difficult to have those conversations. And so I was just looking at different ways of doing it, thinking about different forms of programming. And then actually at some point somebody asked me for some advice on something, and I thought, well, I'm not someone to give advice, but I would like to be the person that can support people through those difficult times of transition and conflict. And so at that point, I trained as a mediator. So that's how I ended up
that's
where
the surprise.
I am.
We'll get more into that in a bit. But let's just start with the end, or is it, of your broadcast news career. I mentioned there it was quite a difficult and painful merger of those two huge operations within the BBC, what was BBC World News and BBC News, formerly BBC 24. It's kind of felt a bit from the outside like putting a quart into a pint pot, like chalk and cheese, whatever analogies we want to mix together. Was it quite traumatic to actually be on the inside at the time?
It was something that was kind of a long time coming, and actually didn't think it probably would ever happen, because they did both have a completely different constituency, different models. And served their purpose well. But in the end, when the decision came that is where things were going, for me, as I say, I had already been exploring my other areas of interest, and I was already a qualified mediator. And so when the news came around that it was happening, and that would mean 20 on-air broadcasters going down to, I think it was five, I mean, I can't remember, maybe seven, but the statistics were not good. And I wasn't desperate to fight to stay at all. I just decided, okay, this is the time then that I go. So it wasn't then, I wasn't seeing it in the way that the others who were wanting to stay were seeing it. For me, it was then that process of, okay, this is now when I leave. So it was a life-changing time for me, but in a different way that others were processing it who were staying.
Just on that, I mean, we're going to go back to the beginning in a moment or two, but seeing as we are discussing that, at the time, there was lots of discussion about, it seemed that women, and particularly women with a lot of experience, had been disproportionately kind of selected to reapply for those jobs. You say, did you feel that, or was that just a misperception?
I just, as I say, my decision very early on was that I was going to step away. So I didn't see it through that prism at all. I just wanted to make the choice that was going to be right for me. And I very much felt that what was right for me was to decide, okay, that's been a great career and now it's time for something different.
And let's, right, rewind to how it all started. I mean, people are always interested in this, and you tick the first box, the first qualifications for being on the show. I always wanted to be in news, you said. Why so? Why did those fires, why did those journalistic fires burn so bright within a young Joanna?
I think, well, watching Kate Adie growing up, a woman on TV doing something that was absolutely beyond anything I could imagine, being, you know, traveling the world, war correspondent. She was a beacon. And I think that was really what fired it up initially for me. Then as time went on, I remember a key moment was the Tiananmen Square massacre. That came at the end of my school.
Kate was there as well, wasn't she, as well, I think?
I think she was, yes. Yeah. And funny you say Kate, actually, because a friend of mine from school went off to China to travel around that time as well. And my friend going to that part of the world made me really think. It was a sort of very direct insight into someone going and having that experience, not as a journalist. But talking to her, I found very interesting hearing what she was seeing on the ground at the time and thinking, I want to be part of telling those stories as my job. So that was, there were different things going on, you know, as they always are. There's the sort of, I love the Steve Jobs quote, you can only join the dots looking back. But, you know, you sort of, we can always see all the little bits that fire us up as we're going. But, so there were multiple elements.
But that was the desire. But, you know, a lot of people watching, listening now have the desire, but they also ask, well, the how. Did you have, for instance, any journalism in your background, your parents, any links, anything at all that could help you on the way? So how did you do it?
Very interestingly, what I should have done, and I didn't, was I went to university and I should have got involved in the university newspaper, radio. I did nothing.
Exactly the same here. I couldn't stand the people who worked on it.
I'm glad to hear you didn't do it. Well, no. I just didn't do it because I just got sort of involved in so many other things.
Well, and I didn't do it because they seemed like a bit of a clique, to be fair.
But I got, so consequently, yeah, I got to the end and I was like, okay, I do want to be a journalist. I've got no experience. Well, my dad was in advertising. So I called him up and I said, well, because everybody that I knew was basically their parents were getting them jobs. So I thought, okay, is that how it works? So I called up my dad and he said, I'm not helping you. No one helped me.
Good for
him. He left school when he was 15. He went to work in the post room of an advertising agency and he worked his way up. And he said, you've got to do, you know, find it yourself.
Tough love.
It was. And at the time I was almost too embarrassed to tell anyone this is... no one's helping me here. But what it did do was it fired me up to be like, okay, I'm on my own. So I need to find exactly what I want to do and make it work. And I remember sitting on my bed in my student house going through the Guardian media section in the day when, it was, I can't remember what day of the week it was, but I think it was Monday, but it would come and you'd circle the ads. And I was just seeing all these exciting things, you know, reporter, all over the place. This is what I want to do. So I think I applied for one, got nowhere, obviously. I had no experience at all. So then what I realised I needed to do was get experience. So I contacted newsrooms in places where I could stay for free. So I was in Birmingham. So my first bit of work experience before the lease ran out on my student house was Radio WM. I went up to BBC Radio Scotland because I could stay with family in Glasgow. And I worked at Fox FM, which was Oxford, near to where I grew up in.
But basically as an intern, I mean, you would do anything that came along.
Yeah, I just got work experience, not paid, just sort of looking to see what was going on. But of course, in a commercial environment, which is what happened at Fox FM, they grab you up greedily because, you know, you're an extra pair of hands. So immediately I was going out and with the Ewer. Did you ever work in radio, Thomas?
No.
So you don't know the Ewer?
I did a bit as a presenter, but I would sit in studios like this, but I never as a reporter. Okay. So I do know of them.
Yes.
Just explaining
so the
to
big,
people.
The big twin tape machine. And that's what you'd go out with your sort of tape recorder. You'd come back with the tape. You'd edit it with, I'd loved that process with the blade and the tape. And so I was doing that. Like almost immediately, having arrived at Fox FM. And again, actually another memory that comes in that first day in the newsroom. I mean, we're really going back in the day, walking in and the typewriters
like
and
the,
yes, it was. And the, you know, the cigarettes with the ash tipping off the edge. And oh, I walked in and I was like, I'm home. I wasn't a smoker, but it was just like, it's a working environment. I loved it. So I think I was there for 2 weeks. Extended to 3 weeks, and then they said, look, we'll make you a trainee, which was just being paid a tiny amount of money, but just as a sort of 6 months learning on the job, that turned into a job, and I went from
there. It's the real old way in, isn't it? Because it's always said to me at the time, you know, when I was trying that slightly different route, in that I was lucky enough to get a one of these postgraduate courses, which did open some more doors because, you know, the newspapers and broadcasters took students from that. So it was a little less difficult than you. But it's always said, isn't it? The more difficult it is in a way a qualification because the potential employers go, they've got journalistic nous. They can get their feet in the door and they won't take no for an answer.
Yeah, interesting. Yes, definitely. And I didn't do one of those courses because I simply couldn't afford to do it. Mm. So, but exactly as you're saying, I mean, and back to what my dad said, you know, if you want to do it, you will find a way. And that's what you need actually to do well in a career. You need to be passionate and driven and then you'll make it work.
I love the sound of your dad. Did he teach you to swim by throwing you in the pool? You know, is that the kind of...
I don't think he quite went that far, but yeah, he's a very, very kind, good man. But that, I think that was the toughest moment when he did that. And I'm grateful that he did that. It was the right thing to do.
So then, first employment then. How did you actually get a salary check or a freelance check? How did you get paid?
So, well, paid, as I say, a very small amount initially at Fox. Then it became a job, so I was paid a bit more. And then I went from there to IRN, which was when we would have met, because that was the radio part of ITN.
Mm.
Yeah, exactly. So that's when I started to, you know, get properly paid and
get your news chops in the sense. I mean, what kind of stories were you covering then? What era are we talking about?
Back when I was at Fox, one of the very first stories was Fred and Rose West.
Good God.
And I remember being in the newsroom when the garden started to get dug up. Mm. And, you know, obviously that's the thing when you're in those moments, you've no idea where it's going to go. And then it's extraordinary as you're sort of incredulously looking on. So that was a very early one there. IRN, what was that era?
It's a blur.
You know, this is what we were talking about this, Dermot. This is my big
thing. Talk about it now. I mean,
remembering. Because, you know, you're doing the job and you just do it day in, day out.
Even the most extraordinary stories as well. And you kind of think, yeah, I was there, I was talking about it, I was interviewing people, but then something else happened and something else and something else, and I didn't get time to process it.
Exactly. And the reason I really clearly remember what I remember now is because I was speaking at a school and I was saying, what was one of my first stories? And I realised, wow, it was the Fred and Rose West, because you then look it up and then remember. But it's one of the early stories at IRN was the Dunblane massacre. And that was
96,
right?
And remember it very well.
Yeah, and I was in the newsroom, obviously covering this story as it's unfolding, and it didn't really touch me emotionally. And I think that's always been an aspect of us in news where you can do the job and it doesn't affect you. And then later, but actually, I mean, we'll maybe talk about this later on, but then later in my career, things did touch me, I think, because, you know, you have your own children. It becomes harder and harder to do those stories. But this is, so this, for that reason, is one I've often looked back to, remembering and thinking, how could I have been covering that story of what was happening, children being shot in a primary? I mean, it was just horrific. But yes, it was basically later. It was when I was driving home and I was listening to it on the radio and I couldn't stop crying because it was, that was when you, it was hitting and I was, wow. Yeah. So that's a really early.
Yeah. No, I mean, ditto. I mean, you've said everything I could possibly say about it. I remember covering, going to Dunblane the day after and just thinking, I just felt deflated. I just thought, I've got very little to say here. Yeah. But I mean, you can say how awful and terrible, but those words aren't sufficient. Yeah. And wow, I mean, you're making the hairs on the back of my neck stand up again. I mean, in terms of stories like that, and it is the processing in reverse.
Yeah.
And that, do you know what? It occurred on my daughter's birthday. You know, my children are slightly older than yours. And so every birthday that comes around, you know, you do think about it, you know, she's obviously grown up now and wow. I mean, I'll leave the rest. We fully understand, you know, what people are still living with because of that. And that's, you know, that's what we do. And, you know, some people say to me, I'm sure they say to you, you know, do you feel it at the time? And I think you put it perfectly, Joanna. Mm. You know, you don't at the time because you are actually performing, dare I say, you know, let's not be too grand about what the job is, but you are performing a public service. People want to know.
Yeah. I got to the point where there were things that I would just find unbelievably difficult to do on air. And I couldn't have that separation.
We're talking about this issue. You mentioned that there were stories later on, particularly after you've had children, that really did get you there.
Yeah.
What were those?
This was right towards the end. I mean, there've been many, many along the way, where I actually broke down on air, which was not something I'd ever done before. And the first time that happened, I say the first because it happened a couple of times, it was extremely uncomfortable because that's not what you're supposed to do. That's not, you know, it's about, no, I'm here to tell the story. It's nothing. So there were two, actually. One was a happy one and one was a very sad one. So the happy one was Nazanin Zaghari Ratcliffe arriving home. Mm. And well, not arriving home, but
just to remind
released.
People, you know, long time. So, I don't know how long she was held by the Iranian authorities for. A child grew up.
And yes. So
basically a hostage.
Yes, she was a hostage. So she was taken. So she went over to Iran with her daughter, who was, now, as I've said, all of these, I'm not good with the, the numbers.
But
her daughter was young, maybe two. And I think she was held for several years. When she was held, the family were told, don't speak about it.
Yeah.
That's the policy. And then Richard Ratcliffe decided, the husband, I will speak about it because we need to get awareness of what's going on. And I did, I think, the second interview with him and interviewed him at length. And so it was one of those that I always felt, you know, quite invested. You feel invested in the news, but particularly having spoken to him and had that real insight into what was going on for a very ordinary family who are thrust into something beyond their capacity initially, but of course their capacity expands, and that's what makes, you know, those are always the stories that really stuck with me, the ordinary people who are dealing with extraordinary situations, and this was a couple of family who were absolutely in that. So I interviewed him several times over the period. And then what started to happen was that it was being said that Nazanin was going to be released. You know, there were all sorts of negotiations, and then it wouldn't happen. And then one day I went on air and we were literally 5 minutes, 10 minutes before going on air. Oh, we think she might be about to be released. And I'm like, okay, well, let's not make any assumptions.
Before.
Exactly. So the news came through shortly after I was on air. Yes, there are. I think it was two or three hostages were supposed to be being released, prisoners being released. And And then I looked down at the screen and I saw it was Nazanin Zaghari Ratcliffe was one of them. And it still chokes me up now because it was just that moment of, oh, this is really happening. And you think of the family, you think of the child. And so that was a moment.
That's a lovely reaction, Joanna. That was just so human.
I felt
how
in
did
the
you
moment,
show it on screen?
Kind of like I am now.
Teared up.
Yeah. But I felt bad for that. I felt like I shouldn't be showing that emotion.
Did you get any audience reaction saying how genuine it was?
Yeah, and I didn't. It's funny because I left the newsroom and I didn't see any of the reaction. I didn't. But then one of my children came home from school and said, "Mummy, you know you're on TikTok." I'm like, "What?" And I thought, "Oh no, you know, how has this been picked up?" And yeah, they were like, "We're really proud of you." And it was, it was interesting. It was, and that's something I really learned actually towards the end of my career. That thing, you are always as a journalist thinking about the audience, what they want to know, how you're the bridge, that connection. You're the one in that fortunate position of asking the questions, often knowing something. Well, you sometimes you know what they don't know.
Often you don't.
And actually, sometimes a very helpful phrase is, "We really don't know much here, but this is what we do know." But anyway, you are the person in that place where you are connecting with the audience. And it was something I felt strongly through my career. That's what drives us, isn't it? That's why we do it, to tell the stories and to get that understanding.
And we'll take a short break there. This programme is brought to you by Big Motoring World, one of the UK's largest used car supermarkets. Big Motoring World checks vehicle pricing regularly to give you their best price guaranteed. With a wide choice of vehicles and a focus on customer service, Big Motoring World supports drivers through each step of the process, from browsing to handover. Their stated aim is to be, in their word, big on what matters to you. Search bigmotoringworld.co.uk to verify and to find your nearest store. That's bigmotoringworld.co.uk. Joanna, just tell me, I mean, you know, we're not obviously doing this sequentially, but when you joined the BBC, it was just before the turn of the century, wasn't it?
1999.
Did you kind of feel, though, wow, jackpot?
I'm really sorry to say,
no,
but I didn't.
Good for you. Yeah.
It wasn't the totem for me. No.
Good.
It was the right job at the right time. I did my first breakfast show. So I was wearing a dress and it was a knee-length dress and it was quite, you know, stand in front of the mirror. That's okay. Well, of course, you sit on a sofa and I'd never sat in a context where my legs are on show because I'm normally behind a desk.
Yeah.
And what's happening to this skirt as I'm sitting on the breakfast sofa is it's riding up my dress. Oh, and I have no idea. And nobody's saying anything over the talkback. And I leave the studio and I say, how was it? And the editor said, well, your skirt was short. And I was like, what? How? And it was just, I was mortified. But again, actually, I mean, that was a sort of early, I suppose, early viral that was on YouTube. And again, that was a sort of, yeah, you can look back at these moments and think, well, that's funny. At the time,
a serious point, isn't it? That's what I was going to say. You know, the difference between the way that male presenters, news presenters and female presenters are treated. I mean, you know, I know for a fact, I've done it many, many times, particularly when I would be sent on the road. I'd take one, maybe two suits, you know, be gone for a couple of weeks. Didn't matter. No one would ever notice if I wore the same jacket every single day. I just took different ties and back three and cycled them, fresh shirts. You know, wasn't that unhygienic. But women, you know, if you wore the same outfit, you know, once in 2 weeks, you get picked up on it, don't you?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was absolutely, it's just an inextricable part, actually, of being a female broadcaster.
Yeah.
And
how it's big and how it becomes personal, you know, you become part of the story. You think, don't you, that, well, look, I'm a journalist like everyone else out there who isn't on television, who are journalists. You know, we're all the same. We all did the same training. I've happened to end up in front of a camera. And then suddenly, you know, you're kind of in the papers. And I know that happened a bit to you when, you know, your former husband, Craig Oliver, who, you know, we both worked with, he senior news executive at ITN and then the BBC, became David Cameron's publicity director, director of communications. That's the right phrase. And suddenly, though, you know, you were seen, the family were seen as fair game because of the job he did.
That was a really difficult moment. It was, unexpected because I'd been working in TV. I'd been on TV for a long time. I never regarded that as anything that made, obviously I knew that that made the job that I did different, but I certainly wasn't a high profile figure. I didn't seek it. I didn't see myself as it. And then all of a sudden, I mean, one of the worst was walking my kids to school and being followed by a photographer. That was horrible. It was really, and obviously, you know, people have lots of experiences. You know, that was, I got it in a small way, but still it was a shock. And it's something completely different.
But wasn't that thing about, you know, on the occasions when, you know, I've been in the papers for, you know, reasons I didn't want to be in my head, I'm the same. You know, I'm a journalist. I started in newspapers, in actual fact. And, you know, I wouldn't broadcast on my, you know, news channel, Joe or Joanna blogs, you know, tabloid journalists go shopping in, you know, dirty trackies. I mean, how is that a story?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that, you know, that's obviously that's the way that operates, doesn't it? You know, it's a different environment. It's, you know, suddenly, my husband was under the spotlight. He was doing a high profile job. I understood that.
You've got to rush off in a moment or two, but, you know, change. So, you know, we've touched on it, but your family mediation, family and corporate mediation now with a big law firm.
Yes.
You said earlier you had done the training while you were at the BBC. That's now one of your main jobs. But how and why? And I kind of get it from what you said earlier that the two are related. The news, because of the, I suppose, the conflicts you've seen and, you know, your inability to influence them in any way, shape or form.
You know, that understanding and being able to listen and to understand, it doesn't mean that ultimately you're saying, yes, I acknowledge I was completely wrong and you were always right. Because that's not what it's about. It's about both people being able to see, both sides being able to see. We were holding on to this because this is how we saw it. This was our level of understanding at that point. But now we see. And there's, you know, you can, it's a game changer. And then people can move on with the rest of their lives. And that's ultimately, why I do it.
God, what a difference you're making. What a natural progression for your career. And long may it continue. I know we got to end it. I wish we didn't. Joanna, you must come back. Thank you very much indeed, Joanna Gosling, for joining us on Legends of News.